what can I do to make my life easier in terms of like how to play the game. It's not like how, you know, making my life easier, like more comfortable to live in. It's like how can I continue to play this game?
Welcome to the Behind the Scenes podcast. This is Michael Golab. Today I'm talking to my first guest, my friend Chris Hardman. Chris has worked as a visual effects head of department on Hollywood films like Jurassic World 2, James Bond, Spectre, Pirates of the Caribbean, Avatar, Harry Potter, Wonder Woman, Jason Bourne, Kingsman, Assassin's Creed, Star Wars Episode 7, to name but a few. He also has his own production company, Hardman Pictures, working closely with Matt Hukins at Camelot Films. The latest feature is The Obscure Life of the Grand Duke of Corsica with Timothy Spall and Peter Stormare, which I am lucky to be in as well, and they're now about to start shooting The Seed, a tale of horror, death and alien invasion. Chris shares how he started his career completely self-taught and became a visual effects artist and feature film producer. His three main takeaways for aspiring filmmakers, the mindset that enables him to persevere and overcome obstacles, the importance of having more than just one skill up your sleeve, the role of flexibility when things don't go your way, and so much more. We cover a lot of ground in this conversation and I hope you'll enjoy it as much as I did. Hello, Chris.
Hey, how you doing?
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Thanks for being here.
Oh, no problem. No, it's good. It's nice.
So tell us, how did you get into visual effects? Because you're self-taught, right?
Yeah, that's right. Like, I studied graphic design at university, and there was like a very, very small section for 3D and animation. It was mainly like advertising and illustration. And while I was a graphic designer, in my early stages of my career, I would always be learning about visual effects and the idea of computer animation. And it took me probably like four years after graduating before I kind of got my first job as a director for a TV ad. And it was just like, I was originally supposed to just be the animator. And they'd seen some of my tests and my work that I'd done on my website, and they really liked it, and so they hired me as the animator. And then things progressed very quickly from the production side that a lot of people started to pull out, and the project almost collapsed. And I just turned around and said, I could do the whole thing. And so I did. Like, I just spent a month with very little sleep doing this, you know, tiny 30 second TV ads. And the person that hired me was very, very pleased. So she always kept my details on file and just said, look, you know, if anything else comes up, like, that was really, really great what you did, and just kind of stepped up. And it was about a year later, I was a freelance 3D designer and I wasn't doing very well. They wanted more of a senior person and they hired me as a junior artist, and I got fired. And the morning I got fired, I was walking home, and this is like the luckiest thing in the world. Like, I was walking home pretty dejected, and the person who had hired me for the TV ad the year before suddenly phones me and says, Chris, I've got this job. I think you'd be great at it. It's doing visual effects for a feature film. And I said, well, I haven't done feature films yet. I've only done like my own stuff. And she said, no, you can do this, come in. And even luckier was where she was based. So I was working in Hammersmith and I was literally just about to get on the tube to go home after being fired. And she just happened to work around the corner, literally like about 500 yards away from where she was, where I was phoning her from. So I literally just got fired. And then half an hour later, I was in an interview for like a dream job. And it was the most surreal day of my career. And it's always one of those things where you have those moments, those lucky breaks that, you know, you often hear people say within this industry. And that was definitely mine, because I don't think if I hadn't been let go, I probably wouldn't have answered the phone, because I was like so, so busy. trying to get this work done that was beyond my experience. It was a bit of luck. It was, you know, a bit of fate. And yeah, and the best thing about the job was it was a very junior position, which I needed at the time. And it was working on Prince Caspian, the Narnia film. Mm. I went for like an induction week, and they were just doing, I think they were just doing like a mass hiring of new artists to come in and do quite, you know, it was very junior work within the visual effects industry, but I managed to get the job, which was amazing. And then I spent 13 years in the visual effects industry, which was quite a feat, really, considering I'm self-taught.
Wow. And how, so coming from graphic design, and you said they took you on and you were learning there, but did you also use stuff like, I don't know, YouTube videos, or was it trial and error with software, or how did you do all of this?
It was mainly books. Like, this is going to show my age, but YouTube was only launched in 2005. Ah. So it was only around for like a year and a half. In the time that I was learning, so it was books. There were a lot of very, very thick, very detailed books about animation and visual effects, and that was it. I just literally bought, I think I probably spent about £200 on books and just learned from that. It was never a YouTube experience. I use YouTube now to learn new techniques and learn new things with different pieces of software that I'm kind of learning at the moment.
And so now, after 13 years, you said, of being a visual effects artist, you've become a producer as well now. And there's people who say you can't do a few things and be good at them, right? So how do you manage to transition and do both at such a high level?
It was in 2014, very early 2014, and I was going through quite a big personal crisis. And I made the decision, I was like, right, this is your time to make a short film. You know, this is definitely the time you're very comfortable within the visual effects world. This is definitely a time where you can go out there, start to meet actors, you know, other producers, directors. So I met Matt Hookins. And we kind of sat down and just outlined, you know, what we both wanted to do with our lives. And we both had very similar goals. And I just said, look, I'm going to make my first short film. Do you want to help? He was like, yeah, let's go and do it. And so we did it. It was literally like a 6-week process. We were both working on other things. Like, we met up pretty much most evenings and put together schedule. We broke down the script that I wrote, and that was based off of one of my friend's books. And I very much treated it like a college or, you know, a first university project. I was never going to be blown away by it, but it was very much just me discovering like how to make a film. And I made it. Like, it was 2.5 nights that we shot in a Soho alley, which was just kind of funny. And I finished it. It took me a while to finish it because I did like all the visual effects, and I managed to get like a couple of people to help out with a couple of things that I didn't know, or just like showed me how to do stuff. Again, it was like, again, a self-taught thing, and it was like self-motivated to get it finished. And it looks fine. Like, I mean, you know, I don't think the direction or the acting was particularly amazing, and that's my fault, because, you know, as the director, it's your story. But as a first piece of work, you know, I'd never really picked up a camera before to direct actors. I'd always done animation, so you get to cheat in animation. You can go backward, you can keep going backwards and changing stuff and moving stuff around. But when you're, you know, directing actors, you have a very finite amount of time, so you have to get it right. And so it was just down to experience. I just wanted to get a film done and then go and make more. It was never a case of, you know, this is my masterpiece, because it certainly wasn't. But it was very much a learning curve for me. So I finished that. And then in the middle of 2014, I got made redundant from my job. So I went to ILM, which is Industrial Light and Magic. They had opened up a studio in London. They'd been running for about a year, I think. And I went there and I was very excited because I was going to work on like Star Wars and their amazing film. Mm. And I absolutely hated it. I just felt like I'd taken like a massive step backwards. Like, I didn't learn anything. I think that's probably what it was. I didn't learn anything that I could use in the real world. And it was just like, well, this isn't what I want for my life. This is not what I want from my career at all. So I stayed for my contract of like 6 months. And I left, and then it all changed. And I'd kind of like, in my head, I was kind of like going, okay, well, you need to figure out what you're going to do next. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, I was going through quite a big personal crisis that was still continuing from 2014. I just lost my job. I'd just come out of a relationship, all within the space of like a week. And so I was like sitting there just going, oh my God, this is kind of life changing. Like everything's about to change. And I then decided to set up my own company because I just felt like I had nothing to lose. I've done it very, very kind of quietly. And when I set it up, I wanted to make my own feature films. And I'd kind of set a path out for myself that involved raising money to help fund the process of getting films made. And at the same time, me and Matt met up, and we were sitting in the Curzon in Piccadilly, and we were just kind of both just going, you know, like, this is a really, like, it's a bit of a low point in terms of where we are, because we, you know, we don't have anything to lose, but it's quite exciting in the sense that we both knew what we could achieve. And we set out a plan of how to raise money. And we had a project, like he had written a project called Prize Fighter, which is a boxing film set in the 1800s. And as soon as he hadn't even shown me the script, he told me the log line. And it was basically about the first ever unofficial heavyweight champion of the world. And it's like the forgotten boxing hero. Like no one really knows the story of how boxing started. And I really liked it. It's kind of like Rocky meets Amadeus. And I really liked it. And I said, this is going to be like our feature film. This is going to be the one that, you know, launches us. And this was like 5 years ago. So a lot's happened since then. So we kind of sat down and I said, look, I've always had this opportunity to go and teach in India. And that was to teach film and visual effects. When I was working for Prime Focus, I used to go over there and teach for like 3 to 6 months at a time. And they always said to me, like, if you ever want to come back, you'll be more than welcome. And so I contacted them and just said, look, I've kind of set up my own company to start developing and create my own feature films. And they kind of laughed. So I didn't ever really thought I would do this. And I said, look, I'm looking for a position which is basically all expenses paid so I can raise a significant amount of cash in a very short time. And the way I supported myself through like the early 2010s was going to India to teach because they just paid for everything. Like, you know, I didn't have to pay rent. I didn't have to pay bills, like there was nothing. So I just dropped everything. Like I didn't have any ties here in England anymore because I just come out of a relationship and I didn't have a job. And the one thing that myself and Matt needed in order to progress was just a little bit of like seed money, really. And we were, you know, we didn't want to go to a bank because then that adds like a, you know, so much more pressure of having to pay it back. And we knew that it could take a while. And to be honest, I don't think we would have even got like a business loan. I think we would have just been like laughed out the door. So yeah, I set off in December of 2015. And it was a year-long contract. It was teaching and working within the visual effects industry, but my hours were very rigid. So I worked from 7 a.m. till I think it was about 2 or 3 p.m. And then I had the rest of the day to work on my own thing. And that's exactly what we did. So we set like a plan of you know, how much money we needed to make the Prizefighter short film or The Birth of Boxing. And we, you know, we set a date, I think it was April, because I knew then I could have X amount of money going into that particular project.
How did you guys make the transition from making shorts to feature films? Because I guess it's a completely different ballgame.
Yeah, well, that comes next. Our main aim has always been Prizefighter. It's always been the boxing film, has been like the ultimate goal. But we knew that we didn't have enough experience to go and make that. And, you know, the boxing film is going to cost between £5 and £8 million. And Matt wants to be the lead actor.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So,
because he wrote it as well,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he wrote it. So basically you've got two producers who've never made a feature film back in 2015. You've got a lead actor who's never been a lead in a film before. And you've got a first-time writer. So we always knew that that was going to be like a really tough sell, if not impossible sell, to be in a position after the short film to then go and make the feature film. Like, people were literally just like, you're never going to do this. Like, never in a million years are you going to do this. So like, you just don't have enough experience. You just won't be able to do this. And we know what we're capable of, but we also know what our limitations were at the time. And so we kind of just said, well, let's make a incredibly low budget feature film, which is, you know, how all filmmakers start off, don't they? They always make really, really low budget feature films. So I kind of came back from India. I was, you know, it was November, December 2016. I'd done my year, a little bit of money behind us. And we went out to a couple of financiers that Matt had met while I was in India. And we kind of said, you know, we've got this low budget movie, we would like to make it. We've always got the boxing movie as our ultimate goal, but we know that we have to make low budget, mid, then high budget. You know, we can't just jump from making short films to making a relatively high budget film.
What are like the three main takeaways for someone who wants to get into producing, start doing his short films, feature films? What are like the three main lessons?
What are the three main lessons? Number one would be, yeah, you have to be very thick-skinned, because you have to be prepared to be told no a million times. You have to have like a never give up attitude, and you have to be very versatile in what you can do. Any extra discipline is very, very common now within the film industry. I mean, even in my early stage, I always knew I wanted to make my own films. And it was a case of like, okay, well, how do you do that? Like, and, you know, back in my early 20s, I was like, well, what are you good at right now? And I was like, well, you're good at computers, you're good at the technical side, develop that. And then when the time's right, you'll know when you can move into other things. And I've always done it where I've had a backup career. So when I was starting out in film and visual effects, I had my graphic design career as a backup. So I was doing that as a freelance job on the side.
Yeah.
Then when I moved, you know, into visual effects, that built, and I didn't really need to do the graphic design so much. So then I've started doing, you know, people's short films. I'll just contact people and just be like, I heard you're making a short film. Do you want like a runner? Do you want any extra help? And I just go along, watch what they're doing, you know, help out where I could as a runner. And I must have done that on like 7 or 8 short films, and just at the weekend, learning whatever you need to learn. And I think that's what people kind of grabbed hold of, especially when we first made our first feature film. Like, our investors really liked the fact that I would take care of like the post-production side, as well as producing, as well as like I helped, you know, with a small bit of finance. They were like, they were happy that I was willing to put my own money in. And that was, you know, remnants of the money that I had earned in my teaching job. So all those little things help.
Yeah. So how do you, I mean, on days when everyone's saying no to you and everything looks like it's failing, how do you get yourself up again? How do you say?
You just do.
You just do.
Yeah. I mean, even on the project we're doing now, we have like about three or four alternative plans. Do you kind of have to think of the worst possible scenario and then work up from that?
I love that. So you take everything as a learning opportunity. You always come prepared with a few. So if this doesn't work out, you'll do. So if A doesn't work out, there's B, C, D, and E. I love that. So because oftentimes you just want the world to be a certain way, and if that doesn't work out, you're just done. But
you have to be like that, because otherwise you're never going to get anything done, I don't think. And I mean, like, it consumes all our time. It's nuts how little time we have at the moment. And but it's good, because, you know, we are building our companies, and you have to know every single aspect of it. And that's our thing. We don't care that if we have to do the work, we have to do it. It's just, we enjoy the outcome of it. Even if sometimes you don't enjoy the process of it, like, you enjoy the outcome of what you've achieved.
So Chris, what I love about this conversation is that there's like this deep sense of humility about your journey that you have, and you're someone who just makes things happen. I mean, you just produced a film with Timothy Spall and with Peter Stormare, and that's where we basically started talking, where we met in Malta. And how did you make that?
So the Duke. So me and Matt, after finishing our first feature film, we ran out of money again. And this was like June 2017. I did pretty much a similar thing of going to India. I actually went to Sweden this time, and it was working for a visual effects company called Important Looking Pirates. And that was probably the most fun I've had, after coming from ILM, which I didn't really enjoy, to go into this family-run visual effects studio in Stockholm. I was there a year and a half, and it was the most fun I've ever had. And again, I was there to raise money. I was working. Me and Matt were, you know, on the phone every night, organizing stuff for Price Fighter. We was, you know, still learning like a million things with the producing side and just planning and, you know, structuring stuff that was going to help us. And then along came the Obscure Life of the Grand Duke of Corsica. I got sent this script probably like February 2018, I don't really remember. And I think I read it three times, and I was like, I don't really get it, but it's really well written, and I really enjoyed it. And it was only when I met the director, Daniel Graham, me, Daniel, and Matt met in a coffee shop in Soho, and on one of my breaks from Sweden, I came back for a couple of days just for meetings, and one of them was with Daniel, and he kind of explained the film, and I completely understood it. It's very art house, and to make an independent art house is probably one of the hardest things you can do in amongst the world of like Marvel films and Star Wars and all the big budget films. Like, is there still an audience for independent art house films? And there is. So we kind of sent it out to a couple of sales agents, and we had a really good response from it. And we picked a company called AMP, and they're really great. They supported it from day one, and they were like, you know what, this is something that is different and special. And Daniel had done a feature film before with Willem Dafoe, and that was like a big selling point, because a first-time director working with, you know, at the time, I think he had just been nominated for the Florida Project. He had just been nominated for an Oscar. So it was this really interesting script, along with a director that had really, really good track record. And me and Matt kind of was just like, we should push this. Like, we should definitely push this, along with Prize Fighter. You know, this could potentially be our next film as a producing team. Launched it at Berlin in February. We'd brought Tim Spall on. Tim had met Daniel, really liked the material, really liked Daniel as a director. And we launched it with Tim, and then Peter came on board, Peter Stormare. And then all of a sudden we had this backbone of really great director, really great cast, and really interesting story. And we kind of started to engage the lawyers around July 2019. And we'd got to the point where we had, on paper, we'd got investors, we'd got all the finance structure in place, we'd got everything ready. A couple of the investors decided to drop out. And it was a massive roller coaster to try and get that film kind of over the line. And the finance guys at Ingenious, they were just phenomenal. They were just so good with just believing in us, really. And it was definitely like a baptism of fire to have that as your first financial close of a feature film. There was a point in that film where it nearly collapsed like three times. And the one thing that we did right was going to Malta. So in order to get the Duke made, we had to go to Malta to do a recce. And in that recce, we had actually found like about 80 to 90% of our locations. So it was almost like a location scout, stroke recce, stroke everything. So we had pretty much locked in everything that we needed to lock in order to shoot the film.
Wow.
So when we were coming to close the finance, the best thing we ever did was go to Malta. That might sound silly, but we didn't have any money. So we were literally going to Malta on, I think it was about $5,000 or something. And we were like, right, it's the middle of summer season here. We have to try and, start pre-production on this film between like the three of us. So we were going around like taking pictures of the locations. We were sending them back to the finance guys to make sure they were keeping the ball moving and showing that we were making this film. And we then borrowed some money off of like one of the investors, knowing full well if it collapsed, it was basically down to me and Matt to pay it back.
Yeah.
And so then we could get across the DOP, and then we could get across the line producer. And then it was like another week passed. We were still trying to close the finance. We were still trying to start pre-production on this film. And by the end of the second week, I think we had costumes there. We had production designer. We had about 50% of our crew, or our UK crew, in Malta. And we were borrowing more money from our investor and trying to get things made. Like the production designer needed, money to make props. Like the costume designer needed money to make the costumes.
Mm.
And we were trying to organize accommodation for everybody, because in Malta, it was a very busy tourist island. And trying to find accommodation that fitted in within our budget was just a nightmare. And all the time, there's myself and Matt with the finance side. Matt's dealing with the actual closing with the lawyers, and I'm trying to deal with making sure that prep doesn't stop and trying to make sure everyone's happy and continuing to work. And we finally get like into our studio space where we were going to shoot a lot of like the interiors. And so we spent like 2 weeks of the 4 week shoot in one space. We finally get in there and everything starts to gel together and everything really starts to move. The finance side starts to fall in place. The pre-production is going relatively smoothly, although we had to start a little bit later. Negotiations are still going on with actors. We're having to book flights for the remaining UK crew literally like the day before they come, just because the process of trying to make our film was just so intense and we were just up against time constantly. And then it all came together the final week. Everybody was relatively happy. Matt was considerably stressed trying to get the finance side. I was still considerably stressed trying to get like the pre-production finished. And then on the Friday before the shoot, we locked in the finance. Peter Stormare got on a flight from LA to Malta. Tim got on a flight from London to Malta. And everyone arrived. And the filming was an absolute breeze. Like it was great. Like it was a really, really enjoyable experience.
I mean, being on set, there was such a nice atmosphere on set. Like it was like working with friends. And I never met Stormare, but I had this scene with Timothy Spall, and he's such a great and humble guy as well. But the whole set was just such a joy to. I just enjoyed every single second being there.
Yes, well, you so, managed to come on. I would say out of everybody, you probably had like the most fun, because you came in and you did like your job and you did it really well, and you saw like the fun side of filmmaking.
you didn't see like the whole horribleness of what preceded it. I think if you'd have seen the previous bit, you would have just been like, oh my God, this is ridiculous. And it was pretty hectic, but it was, you know, like it's one of those things which us as new producers, we knew the filming was going to be a breeze. Like, not a breeze, I mean, there's still challenges.
Oh, yeah.
It was nowhere near as tough as trying to get that film off the ground.
Yeah, but that's kind of the luxury of being an actor, that you usually come in and everything is set up for you.
That is very true.
So yeah, I was very happy that I didn't produce it.
Yeah. Well,
I just enjoyed it. When's the film coming out now?
So we have, we finished it during lockdown. We finished it at the beginning of May, and it's now with our sales agent. So we are in the process of launching it and selling it and just doing like a number of different things. So we want to do a couple of screenings. We want to get it out to some festivals. And at the moment, with, you know, COVID still in the air, you know, this year has been different for launching films, and especially for independent art house films, it's a difficult scenario to predict and be in. We're still working on like the strategy for it, but it's finished and it looks great, and we're all incredibly proud of it. The thing that people aren't ever going to know is the process of how it came to be.
Oh yeah, I'm so excited to see it too. What I'd be interested in, Chris, is what would you say is your greatest failure, and what have you learned from it? Because what interests me is that usually when you see stories of success, there's this whole survivorship bias thing where you kind of think, this person just got lucky, or this person, you know, they're just successful because they are. But you don't see all the failures behind that.
Yeah, I guess
you don't see all the work.
Yeah. So with me, it's definitely been like hard work, and I guess the failure comes from, you know, in my 20s, I always tried to start projects and just didn't have like the confidence or the conviction to continue them, or I would get distracted. Yeah. And I think with the visual effects side of my career, because we are at the end of the pipeline in terms of filmmaking, like you're finishing the visual aesthetic of the film. And so that kind of taught me how to finish stuff. And I know that might sound really silly. That might sound really, like to some people, that might just be like, well, you'd have to finish a project. But I think in my early 20s, I think, and I think probably a lot of people do this as well, like they start a project and they get distracted, and then they don't know how to finish it. And and I guess
I
have built like this mentality of, number one, knowing when something's done, but also when you're in that work environment and of doing shots for film and visual effects, like there is, you have a finite time to do something, and it has to be like good as well. It can't just be like average. And especially in the departments that I do, like it's like a really obvious thing if it's wrong. Like, so it's either right or wrong. And so, you know, when it's right, because then it's finished. But in terms of actual failures, I mean, I think I've failed so many times with, you know, different projects didn't quite happen, or just having that different kind of mentality of thinking that you're going to fail. And I really made that switch like over the past kind of 10 years of, you know, having that self-belief, confidence, and understanding that you're going to just sit down, focus, and work your absolute hardest using your ability, your talent, your knowledge to produce like a piece of work that people will enjoy.
Is that like, what advice would you give to your younger self? What do you wish you'd have known, let's say 10 years ago?
Probably not to worry. Yeah. Like, I think I worried a lot when I was younger. I think I didn't have the self-belief that I could do like really, really good work. I think you also have like people around you. If you have a really good group of people around you that are encouraging, are supportive of you, and you're supportive of them, then that's where that belief magnifies. And I think that's what me and Matt have. And it's taken a really long time to get there. Like, we've been working together 6 years now. And you have to have that self-belief and that belief in somebody else that they're going to do what they say. And sometimes, yeah, you can get burnt. Like we've been burnt many times on this journey, but we believe in each other. And, you know, we've had people that have come into our group and they've done really well, and they've kind of fallen out because, not fallen out with us, like we're still friends with a lot of people, but they've kind of fallen out because they either don't have the same commitment, they don't want the responsibility of what we're doing, or they don't have the time or something. I don't know.
Is there like a ritual you have to not dwell on things and not to worry? Do you meditate, or do you tell yourself, just don't dwell on it, mate, or just get on with it? Or is there anything small that you do?
I don't meditate. I do, like, I go to the gym and I do yoga. But no, I think my mentality now is just don't give up. Like, just never give up. And that's what I would say to any young or anybody. It doesn't matter how old you are. And that's with any industry. It's not just the film industry. It's like anything within your life. So yeah, we just understand that we're on the cusp of being able to do this full time, and it's been a very, very slow progress of getting here. And we just tell each other, like, or every time we speak to each other, we're literally just like, one more step, you know. And we are getting there. Like, and our ultimate goal is the boxing film, and we actually believe that's gonna be, there was supposed to be this year, but obviously the COVID situation halted that, and now we kind of have to push it back to next year because it's too big a film to make with the COVID restrictions. So we have a smaller film that we're making back in Malta, and we go in a couple of weeks as soon as, like, you know, flight restrictions have lifted, and then we'll start on the bigger film. But yeah, like, it's such a long process, isn't it, of trying to start a project and continuing that idea in your head that you're gonna make it, and you're gonna make it to the best of your ability, and you need to get other people involved. And yeah, it's a challenge.
I also love the fact that you have to find your tribe in a way, don't you? Like, you and Matt, you're like a really good team, and you make things happen.
Yeah.
It's what Bob Dylan, I don't know if you've seen the Martin Scorsese documentary on Netflix about Bob Dylan. He says, go out there and find your tribe.
Yeah, find your tribe. Find your tribe and get it done.
Yeah.
We are a good team. I'd like to think he would say he couldn't do it without me. And I definitely think that I couldn't do it without him. So he would probably say, nah, he's rubbish. No, I'm joking. No, he's all right.
Great.
No, we are a good team. Like, we are progressing well. We obviously always want it quicker. Like, we're very, as much as we're patient, we're very, very impatient when it comes to our own progression. We always want to do better. We always want to be like really good.
You create your luck by working hard, basically, don't you?
Yeah, definitely. No one sees that, do they? Nobody sees, you know, they see the pictures of us in Cannes, they see the pictures of us, you know, on set doing these amazing things, but they don't see the back end of it. When I was in London, I think I was like 29, I stayed on my friend's sofa for nearly a year. I shared rooms, and that's really just to save the money so I can actually just continue this game of filming.
Yeah.
Like, I don't see it as, you know, a burden. I see it as a game, and it's like what can I do to make my life easier in terms of, like, how to play the game. It's not like how, you know, making my life easier, like, more comfortable to live in. It's like how can I continue to play this game.
What do you actually love the most about what you do? I mean, the visual effects and producing and all.
Oh, it's the end product. Like, when I'm sitting in a room with my friends and we're watching it and they're all enjoying it, is definitely like the best feeling.
Is there anything about the arduous process that you love?
No. No, there is. Like, it's a game, isn't it? I mean, I don't like filling out forms, but I don't know. Who does? Who likes filling out forms, you know? I just see that as a process. So the exciting part of that is I know what's going to happen if I get this bit done. So that's the enjoyment that I get out of it. So if there's any arduous process that I enjoy, it's the enjoyment of knowing what's going to happen when I've done that arduous process.
That's true. Because I was thinking about myself, see, when I'm as an actor, what I enjoy most is being with other actors and like doing the scene, right? But then I have to learn my lines, I have to do that, then I have to, I'm part of this whole business.
Yeah.
But I'm always trying to find something small in it that I do enjoy. Like, I don't know, like learning lines is such a boring thing. But then I just try, for instance, to use my imagination while I do it, you know, imagine different things.
I completely understand that. I think with any job, there are two sides to it, you know, and I think you have to just find the enjoyment of either what you're going to achieve by doing that.
Yeah.
And then I feel like sometimes actually that then makes that particular process more enjoyable.
Yeah.
Like even if, you know, you're an actor and you're learning lines, I always think, like, if I'm never going to act because I can't act to save my life, I wouldn't enjoy necessarily the learning of the lines, but I would enjoy learning the meaning behind the lines or like the emotion behind the lines. And that's what I kind of see whenever I look, you know, at actors working. That's probably the most enjoyable bit I see of the actors. It's like, it's them delivering the lines in a way that it's unexpected, or they've taken on like their own persona for this character. And I think that's like a really interesting thing.
Where can listeners find you if they want to get in touch with you or check out your work? Or
my website is just chrishardman.co.uk. There's a little contact page, or if people want to come say hi, you know, like that's that's fine.
Thanks so much, Chris. This has been amazing.
No worries. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. If you find this podcast valuable, there are many ways you can support it. You can leave a review on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you happen to listen to it, and you can share it on social media. It really does help other listeners find us. And make sure to subscribe to get the next episode. Thanks so much for your support.